Science and medicine have been looking for ways to treat dementia in its many forms for a long time now. While progress has been made in terms of treatment and caregiving, much work needs to be done. Students of design at the University of Missouri-St. Louis are working one-on-one with local dementia patients, using their skills to help improve the quality of life of those patients. It's called Design for Dementia. Joining me in studio to tell us how it works and how it's working are Jennifer McKnight, Associate Professor of Graphic Design at the University of Missouri-St. Louis's Department of Art and Art History. Sarah Barton is a graphic design student at UMSL. Andrea Wilkinson is a guest professor and researcher at the Lucas School of Arts in Belgium, where she is involved in similar class projects. She is currently working on her PhD in the School of Design at the University of Leeds in the UK. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Hi, Don.
Hi. Jennifer, let me begin with you. When we're talking about design here, are we talking basically about graphic design?
Well, we are definitely coming from the graphic design point of view, but one of the things that's always good to remind people of is graphic design is visual problem solving. And while graphic designers sometimes are working on websites and logos and other kinds of artifacts, in this case, what our real goal was to design experiences, to design ways to interact with other people that were meaningful and helpful to our partners at Brooking Park.
Brooking Park, which is the institution you're working with.
We were really, really grateful to work with Brooking Park Retirement Community in Chesterfield. They are really generous and excited about this project.
You know, I've seen a video, one of the things in the video, actually, it was quite pronounced, were devices. They were things that people were working with their hands, getting away from the graphic design, but almost like puzzles. Is that part of what you're doing as well?
Right. Actually, one of our students designed a puzzle for the days in the life of the resident that came to be his partner. And there was a really interesting kind of situation where we found that those opportunities to manipulate with your hands and to have textural experiences were really important.
Andrea, you've been at this for a while overseas, haven't you?
Yes, that's right.
How many years have you been involved in this kind of research, if I may call it?
Yeah, my colleague and I, Niels Hendricks, we have been working on this first initially as in a funded research project, and then that kind of spilled over into our educational practice as well. We've been doing that since 2011, 2012. So a while now.
So you've had 6 or 7 years to work with it. How is it working?
It's fantastic. Certainly in terms of working with students, it takes students outside of – I mean, we've changed the way we do it has changed over time. Initially, we were still in a classroom situation, and we would go to a care facility, spend the night there, but then go away again. And now what we do is – we try to spend as much time possible at the care facility, kind of taking in the environment as well, getting to know caregivers, getting to know family members that stop by. And so we become design, instead of being this kind of weird thing that pops in and pops out, we kind of become a part of the furniture as well.
Entrenched design.
Yeah.
How does it work? I mean, what sort of improvements have you seen in the people you're working with?
Yeah. Well, just going back to kind of what Jennifer was talking about is that we're creating interactions, and sometimes it's more tactile in terms of what you said about puzzles or these kind of feeling objects that we've made. But also, students are trying to find where does design fit. And so, for instance, family members, one of the things that we've seen everywhere in Germany and Belgium, here as well, and those of you that have your listeners that have a family member with dementia that lives in a care facility, it's often really frightening, or it can be really frustrating to go and visit this person. They don't know sometimes, certainly in later stages, what to say, what to do. And that's a design problem. And so a graphic design student or design student in general can look at that and say, how can design facilitate spending time with this person that I really care about? And not only the loved ones, but also the caregiver. This idea of person-centered care is really important. If you go to almost any care facility around the world, person-centered care will be something that kind of a phrase that is thrown around. And that sounds great. We all want person-centered care, but it's really hard in practice because care is something that, you know, time is precious, time is money. And so how can a design make care more meaningful, How can it facilitate an experience between a caregiver and someone with dementia in terms of personalized care?
Well, Sarah, you've been doing this for the past year, is that correct, or thereabouts? You've been working with the folks from Brookings?
4 weeks.
Just 4 weeks.
I thought it was longer because someone suggested that really it has sort of changed your mind about a career path that you've enjoyed it so much.
It did. It has only been 4 weeks, but it went really fast. It was so much fun, and I loved every minute of it. And if I could do this for a living, I would.
Well, you can, I assume. There's
maybe.
Yeah. To give me some sense of what exactly you were doing during those 4 weeks, the kinds of work you were doing and the people you were doing it with.
First of all, we were just getting to know the residents. We were paired with a particular resident, and we just sort of hung out with them, got to know them. We spoke with family members and caregivers and just learned about their history and stuff they were interested in. And then from there, we just sort of, some of us made prototypes of different things. I did a lot of art workshops with my particular partner, and we just sort of learned what they were interested in and kept on going.
What kind of artwork? Give me an example. If you could describe something so that our audience can have a sense of what we're talking about.
Sure. I did several projects with my partner. We did a mosaic project. We did watercolor. We worked with clay. Can't remember what else we did. We did so many.
Whittling.
Whittling wood was a really big one. Yeah.
That strikes me as a little bit different. Andrea, is that something that you've worked with as well?
Well, no, but I think if Sarah could go on and tell a little bit about how those kind of fed into actually what you made then for Emily, the resident there.
Yeah, so Emily was very into art, and that was what connected her with her personhood. So it was important for me to create something that would facilitate that for her. So I created a workshop that her and other residents like her could go to that was more refined art projects. So that was my goal, was to just keep her involved.
I'm interested in learning more about the change, though, if any real change in the people that you're working with, how they were different at the end of your 4 weeks than they were when you started.
It was a short time that we had to work with them. Emily was awesome throughout the whole thing. She's very outgoing and personable. Some other residents were a little harder to get them to want to work with us, but from the beginning to the end, their transformation was amazing. And when we finally got a breakthrough with one of them, it was just awesome.
A breakthrough being what would be considered a breakthrough?
They were just more willing to hang out with us and talk with us. Yeah.
They would smile when she and her partner would walk up. Their faces would light up. And in the beginning, the resident in question, she really was frightened and overwhelmed by people approaching her. And mm-hmm. they really found a way to unlock her intellect and give her really pleasurable experiences using her great body of knowledge about her professor. Her profession as a professor.
Uh-huh. Andrea, can you give me a little more detail of the kind of transformation that you've seen over the years that you've been working at this?
Well, in terms of family members, that it enables them to spend time. We've had, certainly in Belgium, I mean, this is a classic. I can tell stories the whole afternoon if you want me to, but...
Well, you have some time. Feel free.
A good example is a student that we had in Belgium, and she was working with this man who... Over the span, because we'd been working in this care facility for 2 or 3 years, and in the span that I had been there also working, his condition had deteriorated. So he went from someone that was liked to joke around, and he used to teach math, and so he would quiz people on their multiplication tables, and then he became this kind of silent person. He didn't have any children. He had never married. He had one niece that would come to visit him, but he was no longer the man that she mm-hmm. recognized as her uncle. And so the student was talking with her, and the niece said, well, to be honest, this is going to be – I think I'm going to stop coming. And for our student, this was a crisis moment. What I want to see if a design can facilitate her coming and spending just a little bit of time with this man who has no one else in the world who will come and visit him. And so this student actually created kind of a toolkit, a do-nothing toolkit. And so she created, you know, information on how to spend time with someone who can no longer communicate in the way that we can communicate. And so one of the things was, you know, trying to bring attention to this man holding her hand and giving that a place of value. And so that's an example of, for him, that was incredible. He got to spend time with this person that without that design project, that wouldn't have happened.
I'm not sure I fully understand, but you can help me on this, how the design projects are therapeutic. I mean, they appear to be. You see transformation and changes. What is it about the project itself that is therapeutic?
I don't even – it's strange that you're – or funny that you're using the word therapeutic. I've not – certainly when we talk about the project in Dutch, we've not
really
used that kind of language.
This is not a therapy that
– No, it's more – we use the word mediation a lot. So it's really something that, you know, an object, a tool, a thing, a way of working that I can put between you and me that can facilitate us having a relationship, us communicating – me being more sensitive, me being aware, or as a caregiver saying, I know something about you that I didn't know. If I can briefly tell another project, maybe it will make more sense. We did another project called Memory Blocks. And so if you go into a care facility, you'll often see pictures, but in you know, family photos and frames. People often make life books, this idea of collecting someone's life in a kind of brochure kind of format with a little bit of textual information. And so we said, well, that's interesting, but what about music? I mean, there's lots of studies. Everyone's seen some YouTube films on Facebook of how important music is and how it kind of opens people up. And so we wanted, how can we bring music? Almost every room in a care facility in Belgium has a CD player that's never turned on. You know, a CD player is a very strange device, actually, if you think about it. The play button is a triangle.
It's not from the 1930s.
No.
And so when people start losing their memories of current times, they might lose their ability to know how to work that machine.
And so we said, well, let's try to do something with that. And what we created was this block, and we asked family members. We've worked with five families. What are the four most important songs to these to your loved one? And so we gathered these together, and we made this block that had on four, you know, a picture of the song album or single album cover, a picture of the singer who sang it, but just four songs, four meaningful songs, because often, again, care is generalized, and we understand that. We understand that not everyone can have always their favorite songs playing all the time. But when, certainly in Belgium, when they have a sing-along time every 2 weeks on a Thursday or a Tuesday, they sing general favorite songs from a time period. Mm-hmm. And so this one woman, we were doing a workshop with the caregivers, and this caregiver said, he got the block of one of the women of the residents, and he looked at it, and he said, this is all French, you know, fantastic old French songs, which we never play here. Mm-hmm. I have been working with this woman for 5 or 6 years. I see her every night. I'm the night guy. And I had no idea that she loved this type of music. And so, you know, that allowed him to give personalized care that he would have never been able to give outside of had we not done this project.
It seems what we're all saying here is that the benefits of this, a project like this, is as much for the caregivers, family, and the students who are working with these people as to the people themselves. Is that right?
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm coming from the point of view, I'm coming from two points of view today. I am coming as the teacher of this class, but I'm also coming as a family member. My mother actually worked with Sarah. Mom was the reason, and it is very difficult for me to come and see things that she can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. And that affects how I can be with her, which affects her experience of my visit to her. Mm-hmm. So when a designer can reduce my stress as a family member, then that makes mom's experience better when mm-hmm. I'm there. She does get to have a better me visit her. And she gets if Sarah's projects can encourage me to come and do more meaningful things with my mom, then that's better for my mom. My mom gets more of me, and she gets more of me at my highest vibration.
Could you do this? I mean, you're teaching design. You are a designer. Could you work with your mom, or was that less likely to work?
You know, that's the part that really fascinates me about this whole class. I am a design teacher, and I should have been able to figure out what Sarah learned about my mom. But I couldn't, because my emotions were getting in the way. And so one of the things I wanted to point out about what she really designed at the end, after she made her workshop, she made a book for people who don't know a whole lot about art to come in and very easily run the kind of workshops that make my mother happy. And I was really surprised that when we were whittling, I realized that it was really pleasurable, and I wanted to come back and finish what I was making with my mom and tell the stories that whittling makes her think about and the things that she told me. There was a great moment with Sarah where we were whittling with balsa wood, and I told Sarah to bring pocket knives and balsa wood because it was soft. And then at the end of the project, Mom tells us, she says, well, when you're whittling balsa wood, you need really sharp tools because there's drag on the wood. And so with a soft wood like that, it's easier to cut, but it can be harder if the tools aren't sharp. And this is knowledge from 20 years of my mother doing woodworking that we just accessed, and none of us knew. None of us knew. And she had things to offer us.
Sarah, give us your perspective on what Jennifer was just telling us. What were you seeing when all of this was going on?
Well, I guess I have a different perspective just because I've only known Emily the way Emily is now. Mm-hmm. And she has a lot of knowledge about any kind of art. And I knew nothing about wood carving. So
who does, really? You stop to think about it.
It was challenging for me. But one thing that I learned, and especially from that particular work that we did, was just that it's the experience of creating. It's not necessarily the finished outcome.
Well, it must have been interesting to watch mother-daughter relationships develop.
It's even interesting to create a situation where a Brooking Park resident can teach you the things they know, you know, instead of it going the other way around. They have lots of stuff to teach us if we know to ask the right questions.
Well, isn't that part of the problem with dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's is we tend to think that these people are just vacant vessels anymore.
Yeah, and they're not.
They don't know anything, don't have anything to offer.
Yeah.
I'm sure you...
That's the big misconception. Or that they're like children, which is also wrong. Yeah. It's not quite the right rubric.
Andrea, do you think that Europe is ahead of us here in this country in dealing with issues like this and finding new and innovative ways to work with people with dementia?
I think everyone is concerned with dementia and trying to do what's best. I think... you know, I think everyone's familiar with the Dementia Village in the Netherlands, where it's set up, you know, where there's a store. There's, you know, a whole village that's set up within kind of a closed environment so that people can wander around. There are some really great initiatives, I think, everywhere. I don't think that the U.S. – I think the thing that kind of sometimes feels – certainly for me, I've been living abroad since 2001 – so coming back, it's this idea of how much care costs here is very palpable. But certainly I think if you go to a care facility and you meet people who are working with people with dementia, they almost always have the person with dementia. That's who they're working for. They're trying to make it the best experience for them.
Sarah, is any special kind of training necessary before you get involved with these folks?
I would have to say no, because I had no experience with dementia before this class, and it turned out to be a really great experience.
Yeah. What do you think, Andrea? Would it be beneficial to be able to train these people beforehand?
This course ran a little bit differently than when in the workshops that Niels and I do, or the longer semester modules or courses that we do, where we do, Well, I sent through the films.
Introductions to...
We do introductions. We do kind of a best practice on how to, you know, don't come up behind someone. If you're talking to them, get close to them. Be on eye level. Use short sentences. So we do have a... certainly in all the care facilities, we always try to get someone to come in and say, okay, here, this is what's important to us. You're basically taking a role, you know, they're not really students. They're kind of taking a role of a volunteer, and they're stepping into the shoes where they, you know, push people around, and they need to kind of know the tools of the trade a little bit.
My most interesting takeaway from what you told the students to prepare them for this class is that you're coming into these people's home and you're asking them for a lot of personal information. And that you asked my students to meet them in that way, and that they needed to give their personal information and meet them on a human to human level, yeah. and expect some give and take in order to start a relationship that would be meaningful with these people. Yeah, really.
Our time is winding down, but Jennifer, let me ask you and the others as well, what sort of response do you get from the institution, Brookings Park, for instance, as to what they're seeing as a result of what's going on?
They were an amazing partner. They were so supportive of us coming in. They were really thrilled to see, as the projects progressed, watching different residents have moments of lucidity or moments of their highest vibration where they were really savoring the experience or just opening the doors for these students. So they have been very, very excited about this project. We've also gotten a lot of support from UM St. Louis.
Sure. Very quickly, Andrea, our time is running out. Your experience in terms of how it's received by
care?
Care
is often really hesitant at the beginning because they go, you know, I have no idea what you can offer. We've had that experience in Germany and in Belgium, maybe here as well. I'm not quite so sure. But the result is always, thanks for coming, and when are you coming back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sarah, in a word or two, your feeling about what the institution has felt about this?
They were always very welcoming and very helpful. Any questions we had, we could find someone to answer them for us.
Got to stop it right there. Thank you so much. Andrea Wilkinson, thank you for being with us. Sarah Barton, thank you. Good luck with your career. And Professor Jennifer Knight,
thank you
so much for being with us. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.